Thank you, Joyce. Okay, we've already collected the seven traditions, so there's no need to go into all of that. So what I will do is introduce our speaker this evening. Her name is Kelly, and she is from
Texas.
Come on.
Dallas.
All right, come on up.
Thanks.
It's good to have you here.
Good to have you here. I'm glad to be here. Thank you so much.
What's the name of the lady beside you?
That's my daughter, Lindsay.
Lindsay.
That's my daughter, Lindsay. Hey, everybody. My name's Kelly. I'm an alcoholic. 9/14 of 2005 is my sobriety date. Glad to have that sobriety date. It's not my first sobriety date. I wasn't one of those come in, come out, come in, come out, but I did come in 1996, and I stayed for 7 years, and then I went back out. And it was not pleasant, and it was worse than the time that I came in before. I mean, it was horrifying. Anyway, so I'm an alcoholic. I'm from Texas. My daughter is here, right here beside me over here, Lindsay. She's never heard me tell my story. I'm sure she'll get more of what it was like, you know. I know she will, even though I said, well, you'll probably get, you know, what it was like. And she goes, I lived it. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay, right. I just forgot. Yeah, right. Okay. So anyway, I'm from Texas. And my daughter, she's got four children. And so my son-in-law's in the military. And so they moved from Virginia to California. I've never been to California before. And the first thing I wanted to do, first of all, my daughter and I drove down here with three kids and a dog. And so I remember sitting in the car, and I was just like, my hair was like out to here, sticking out. And she's over there reading a book. You know, the kids are screaming, and it's just, whoa. And I just looked at her, and I said, man, my physical sobriety's in jeopardy. And she said, well, go to a meeting. And I went, I said, how are you reading that? But if you just try to do some inward meditation, I said, for me, meditation, you got to be quiet, you know? And somehow she's taking her finger and reading the book like this. I'm like, oh, my God, okay, whatever. So when I got to, I live in Chula Vista. So when I got to Chula Vista, I looked on my map and my phone. I said, I'm going here. And I'm so grateful I came here. Happy birthday to all of the celebrants. That is so important to show that Alcoholics Anonymous works, because it does. It works. If you do it, you will be sober one day at a time. And it doesn't go any faster, and if it did, I'd probably be dead today. You know, it just goes exactly the way it's supposed to go. Anyway, I'm from Texarkana, Arkansas. Good God, I know, isn't that something? And I lived in Dallas, Texas I was raised there. So it's the first time I came to California. I don't know why anybody wants to leave here, if they ever want to leave here. This is the best weather ever. Texas, I think it's 105 there today. I'm like, ugh, whatever. Anyway, it's always an honor and a privilege to do anything for Alcoholics Anonymous. I've done a lot for Alcoholics Anonymous, and Alcoholics Anonymous has given me my sobriety one day at a time. I'm never so grateful. I didn't know that resting on your laurels, I didn't know anything about that. I read the book. I had a sponsor. My first sponsor went out and drank. But the reason I like this place so much is everybody's great, because I came from a place in Dallas called Maggie's, and it was a 14-day detox. And that's where I drank for, 25, 30 years. That means I'm old, but that's okay. I'm just grateful to be alive. Anyway, it was a place, and you got there. Same scenario here. You have some responsibility. You do things that we didn't do when we was drinking. You know, never have I ever heard of Alcoholics Anonymous out drinking. I didn't discuss it at a bar. No one ever said, "Hey, you're an alcoholic. You need to get sober." They just stopped being around me. You know, and I've never been to open bar or anything like that, because no one would ever invite me there. I had five friends when I was growing up, and one of them is still my friend. I'm lucky for that. But we'd always go out, and the first thing I drank, I started when I was 14. I think that's like the roundabout age, 14. And we went out to the lake every weekend, and we skied, and we did this, and we did that. And so that's the first time I really, got drinking good. And we had two bottles of Boone's Farm Strawberry Hill wine. I think one was Tickle Pink. We all drank that, didn't we? It's terrible. Terrible tasting stuff. And then there was these five friends. They got two cases of beer, two bottles of wine. Well, in like less than an hour, I had already crossed the line of alcohol, you know? It says I don't have to read the, I mean, I read the book. I have a sponsor. I'm going to tell you all that first. I have a sponsor. She's online. I do it online. It's the first person in my entire life that has ever taken me through the book, step by step, line by line, page by page. And that it has given me a new experience. Mother's like, read page 42 and highlight it and call me later. And I'm like, all right, whatever, okay. That didn't work for me very well, okay? But this lady took me through the steps. She's still my sponsor. I have a home group. It's The Unfortunates in Dallas. It's online. It's when COVID happened, and they just stayed online. And so they've got great recovery. And anything I tell you that you can't reconcile, then call your sponsor. That's all I can tell you. This book right here is the recovery. This is a textbook. That's how we get recovery. We can't just come in here and sit down and do nothing. If you do, I promise you, you'll go out and drink. Because I have the experience. I remember I was on, I've done a lot of service work, and I heard a guy, one of a delegate for Northeast Texas Area 65, which I was a part of. He said, it's either your experience or your opinion. And for some reason, I've heard those two things, but I never heard it just the way he said it. And if I would rather hear somebody with their experience than their opinion, okay? Because we all got them, you know, we can tell you all kinds of good stuff. But this program gave me experience to sit down with another alcoholic across the table and read the book, okay? It's not that hard to do. It's only a little tiny thing, too, 164 pages isn't that big of a deal, you know? But people go, oh, I can't do that, that's big, you know? No, mm-mm. The only thing that helped me was to come back in here one day at a time. And when I got sober the first time in 1996, I'd already experienced living hell, been completely in hell, Freddy Krueger, the whole bit. I had my kids, Lindsay and Kobe. I have two children. That's one of them. That's the good one. she's the good one. I have two children. One writes prescriptions and one takes prescriptions. That's basically the gist of it. In other words, we're just so far apart that, you know, and I can't help any of them, you know. I don't have to help her. She's never done that much wrong in life, you know. It's incredible that I was like, are you sure I'm your mother? Because I've done everything wrong. And I came into Alcoholics Anonymous doing it wrong because I brought in with me my attitude, my narcissistic personality, my controlling and all that stuff. It didn't work in Alcoholics Anonymous. It just didn't. So I had to be down to right size. And like I said, my first sponsor, first of all, I walked into Maggie's. That's the 14-day detox place. I walked in there. And I don't know, for some reason, I just belong there, okay? My mother is how I got there, was my daughter. First of all, these two kids, I was out drinking, and my mother was out taking care of my children. Because I didn't have any, I'm the only child, thank God. I don't want any brothers and sisters. I wish I had one, though, sometime, you know? But y'all are my brothers and sisters, okay? That's just the way it is. Y'all are the best people I have ever met in my entire life. And the best friends I've ever had have come from Alcoholics Anonymous. Anyway, my mother, I was ended up in McKinney, Texas somewhere with somebody I didn't know. And I didn't know it was going to be the last day I took a drink. I really did not know that because I drank a whole bunch of beer and didn't get drunk. Did a whole bunch of outside issues and I didn't get high. I did everything trying to get high and drunk and I couldn't do it. And I was like, what is going on? I don't understand. What happened? You know? And so I called my mother, and she's been a nice, big, fat enabler her whole life, which I'm one, too. And she has enabled me my whole life. And she had my two kids, okay, thank God. And so I remember calling her on the phone one night, and I said, hey, I'm coming home. She said, nope. And I said, what? What? She said, no, I had to put in a security system. I was like, a security system? Why are you doing that? And, well, because I'm a thief. I'm a drunk. I mean, I would put a security system in, too, for myself, if it would have been me. And I have that experience with somebody else in my family, which I'll get to. But anyway, so I was on the phone with her, and she said, you ain't coming home until you go to recovery. I said, recovery? Ugh, what do you mean? She said, you need to go somewhere. You're not coming. If you don't go to recovery, if you don't get help, you can't come home. I said, look here, woman, you have both of my kids. She said, I'm going to go take possession of them on Sunday or Monday. So you either go get recovery or you'll just lose them. And I was like, all right, well, you know, in our mind, we're just got this spinning. Okay, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? You know, I'm in desperation, okay? I didn't know I was in desperation and I wasn't going to drink. I was just in desperation. What am I going to do, you know? And so I called my mother on the phone, and she said, my daughter and her were laying in the bed, and I said, okay, I'll do that. I'll do that. I had no intention of doing that as the man in the moon. I just needed to get back in that house. You know, that's just what we do sometimes when we're drinking. We don't have a brain at all. We just do whatever. I'm very spontaneous. I just do this, do that. Anyway, so I called her, and she said, I said, okay, I'll do that. And first of all, before I even said that, I said, no, I got a key, you know. She goes, well, if you come to the house and you use the key, you're going to go to jail. I was like, what is wrong with her? You know, I don't get it. I don't understand why she's doing that. I said, so I had to go to desperation mode. I said, fine, I'll just commit suicide. She said, go ahead, we'd all be better off. I was like, wow. So I'll never forget that as long as I live. My daughter, that's all she said. So that kind of turned the light on for me for a second, okay? And it said, well, maybe I am just completely sick. I didn't think about sick. I was like, well, maybe it is over. I didn't get drunk this night, you know, blah, blah, blah. I came home, and it was probably 10 years later at Thanksgiving. She said, Kelly, she said, you remember that time where I was telling that story again? She said, remember that time that I called you, and I said, go ahead, we'd all be better off? I said, yep. She said, my daughter, Lindsay, her, and my mother laid in the bed and cried themselves to sleep because they didn't really know if I was going to commit suicide or not, because we don't know. Living with an alcoholic, not my advice, promise you that. To live with an alcoholic is like, anyway. So we all know, I'm sure y'all have all had that experience. Anyway, so in 1996, I got sober, went to the Madeline House, walked in there. It said, don't leave until the miracle happens. That's what I remember. And there was God on the steps. One step, God. And I was like, well, at least he's here. You know, I said, well, I believe in God. But no relationship with God did I have. None. I didn't even know what a relationship with God was. Believing in God and having a relationship with God is totally two different things. Because I had that experience too. So I walked in there, stayed 14 days. And, you know, I really liked it there. You know, I was done. I thought I was pretty much done drinking. I remember us sitting there doing page 86 and 87 when we retired. Not when we go in the morning. What used to be the hunch becomes an inspiration. It's a working part of our mind. You know, all those things I learned from that house. People from the outside would come to the house. We'd have meetings. It's kind of like this. It reminds me of that. And this is, I've seen people coming to meetings every day, get 1 year chip. It's just a freaking miracle. It is a miracle that you can stand up here and say you're 3 days sober. It's like Laura back there. She's what, 15, 16 days sober? I didn't look like that when I came in here, but, you know, she looks really good for being that young in sobriety. But anyway, 1996, I stayed in the program. Then I ended up working at the house as a weekend supervisor. Then I was going to college. I actually went to college. And then, I mean, I started doing all of these things as a direct result of AA. It wasn't on my dime. It was on God's dime. I have a God in my life, and he solves all my problems. Alcoholics Anonymous solved my drinking problem. And so I came in there, and then I met him. I'm so tired of meeting him, I stopped doing it, okay? I just completely stopped. I don't have a boyfriend. I don't care. Is all I care about is doing for Alcoholics Anonymous. I can never, ever, ever repay the debt back that Alcoholics Anonymous gave me one day at a time. Never. I don't care how much money I got. Can't do it. So I went in there, and then I met him, and we met at some bar or something, but he didn't drink. He was not an alcoholic. Drove up in a Corvette, so I have arrived now for sure. Then, after that, then he raced cars for NHRA. So then I arrived. And I went to meetings first year. I mean, up to 7 years. I think I was 4 years sober. 5 years, didn't pick up a chip. 6 years, didn't pick up a chip. 7 years, did not pick up a chip. And all of a sudden, I had a God in my life. I had a sponsor. I was reading the book, going to meetings, working the steps, doing the deal, doing service work. I had four or five sponsees. I was doing it. Except I got to arriving too much. And then when God leaves, the rest is... it's history, okay? It's like a travel package. Do the steps, call your sponsor, pray, read the book, and come to meetings. And it's just that simple. Except sometimes if we're not ready to do this, it comes very difficult for us, very difficult. So what happened was I was racing cars, I was, you know, blah, 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 and on and on and on. I don't tell you that to be boast or prideful. I tell you that because one night when I'd won this and I'd done this and blah, blah, we were sitting in a bar. Basically, we were eating there. He wasn't an alcoholic. And so he said to me, "Oh, well, you've been sober 7 years." I said, "Yes, I have." And he said, "Maybe you can have a drink." I said, "Yes, I can." Because I have no mental defense against alcohol. None. I have no sponsor because she is getting on my nerves calling me. I have no God. I have nothing, okay? And there I am like a wounded duck. And I said, "Yes, I will." And so the waitress came over, and I want Chambord, and I want frozen margarita. I mean, I had a list as long as she's going, hold on. And so three more shots, and anyway. So he got up to use the restroom, and I had $50 in my back pocket. I never will forget this. It was my downfall. $50 in my pocket. He left to go to the bathroom. I saw him turn that corner. That's all I wanted him to do was turn that corner. About that time, I ran to the bar, got three shots of tequila. Here's $50. Give me three shots of tequila. Boom, boom, boom. Drink those shots of tequila. The last shot I took, I said, "Oh, my God, I'm an alcoholic." Because normal people don't do that. Normal people do not do that. And then I was off to the races for 3 years. 3 years. And it got real bad. Real bad. It was, well, because I'm an alcoholic, so now I'm going to do something else. I'm going to do those other things. You know, so that way I can stay awake and I can do all this stuff that I did. Okay. And it was a nightmare and I went to jail. And by the way, I've been so, let's see, I had 21 public intoxications. Sometimes I had my clothes on when I went to jail. Sometimes I didn't. I'd be at the lake, maybe a top on, maybe bottoms. I don't know. And I have two DWIs. I deserve both of them. Absolutely deserved them both. All over the ground. The second DWI is with my ex-husband. I was like, "What are you doing here?" I was over there rolling this and doing that, and I had this fishnet shirt on, had stuff all over me. And when the cop came to the door, he said, "You've got, you know, all over you." And I said, "Yeah, here's this." And I gave him that because I'm drunk. And he said, "Well, whose is that?" And I said, "It's his." So we both went to jail. So here's these lovely two parents that these two children have, and both of them are in jail, one for DWI and one for possession. So it's just a lovely day. And then, you know, in 1993, I had all this stuff to do, you know, like all this probation and all this stuff. And, you know, it's about as long as this podium, what you have to do. But I'm going to tell you something. All that stuff does not keep you sober. If you're not ready to do this deal, you won't do it. And I had to figure out a way to be able to get out of that. Because, see, I'm the easier, softer way. I want the easiest way I can get out of anything. And so I decided, because we have these grand ideas, I had this great idea, I'm going to go to a bar, and I'm going to meet somebody, and I did. And it was this fancy place, and I'm a bar drinker, okay? I don't sit at home, sadly, and drink. I drink and just, spin on the ceiling fan and dance on the bar and all this fun stuff. That's what I do. And about that time, I was in this bar, and this guy kept looking around this way, looking around that way. And I went up to him, I said, "Are you a cop?" He said, "Oh, my God, how did you know that?" And that's the one I wanted right there. That's the one. He's a cop. I got to get out of this DWI mess, okay? So, I mean, that's the way I think when I'm drinking, okay? And so he's like, and so we started dating Al. Remember Al, right? Mm. So, you know, I'm the worst, probably the hardest thing that I've had to succumb to is how I harm people, how I ran over people, how I just ditched them, you know? I'd let go of some really good people in my life that they ran usually to another state. I mean, get away from me, you crazy person, psycho. You know, and that's what we do when we're drinking. But anyway, I got him, and he did help me with those DWIs. And he said, if you ever get another one, you'll see those other two again. So I'm like inches and seconds from prison. Okay, love it, prison. I'm like, been to jail, you know, here and there. You know, 21 times is way too much time. But the last thing I did was in 2000. I'll try to just briefly tell you this, and I really like to get to recovery, but probably the worst thing I ever did, and my daughter was there. She's always been there when I've done some really dramatic, stupid crap. Anyway, so I graduated from college as a direct result of AA, of Alcoholics Anonymous, and so my mother was an executive at Pizza Inn. She made lots of money, and she took us to Paris. So my daughter and I, like, she just goes, oh, brother. I went to Paris, and what happened was, it was horrifying. The first thing I did was I had to find a bar. First of all, I got lost. It was on St. Patrick's. I got lost, and they went this way, and I went that way, I'm sure on purpose, okay? It wasn't I got, oh, my God, I got lost. Oh, I can't find y'all. No, I got to find a bar. I'm drinking, okay? I realized I got to drink. That's what I had to do was drink because I'd relapsed. And here I am in London. I should know better, okay? And I went into this bar in this tavern, and all their liquor's upside down. I was like, what's going on? He said, we give you one shot. I go, oh, God. And so I said, well, I'll have Crown and Coke. He goes, what? I mean, they didn't know what I'm freaking from Texas. What? And they said, well, I'll give you a Coke. And I said, well, can I just buy the bottle of Crown? And they said, no. And I said, well, okay, I guess I'll be here a minute. So then I went from there to this tavern and blah, blah, blah. And then next thing I know, I'm about to get on a bus to New Zealand with this man that I don't know. And I was like stepping up on the bus, you know. Somewhere my daughter came to rescue me from somewhere, okay? I don't know where. Then we were going to Paris, so I had to go to Paris, you know. And she was like, my mother was so mad. She goes, I'll never go to a country. I'll never go anywhere with you again like this. You're horrifying. And so we got on the train. We went to Paris. And then we went to Moulin Rouge. It should have been a nice experience for me, but nope. You know, I drink. I got to go to the bar, and I got to drink. That's all I know. Because once we start drinking, all bets are off. We don't care if we're in Moulin Rouge or Texas Motor Speedway. We don't care. And so here I was, and I bought this Moulin Rouge plate, and my mother's wondering where I'm at. My daughter's there, her boyfriend. They're all wondering where I'm at. And this maitre d'honneur or whatever, she's at the bar, basically. You know, and it was just a nightmare from after that. And, you know, and then I got stopped. It was just a nightmare period. But here I was not remembering because I can't remember a day, a week, or a month. It says that in that book. Once I start drinking, men and women drink essentially for the effect. They don't like it because I've drank hot tequila out of a trunk of a car, and I did not like it. But I knew that it would get me drunk, so I drank it. You know, that's the way we are. And so in 1996, and that happened, and I stayed out 3 years, and y'all know that story. It's just horrible. And by the grace of God, I remember the way that I came back in here. 3 years I was done. I was sitting on the back patio. I met this guy at a Coors convention. Think of that. And his name was T.C. I want to tell you, that guy saved my life. And we were sitting on the back. I'd moved into this apartment in Dallas, and I was trying to memorize how it works. That means I'm fixing to come back in the program. And so I tried to memorize that. I couldn't put two words together because I was just completely fogged out. You know, my brain was done. So I came back in here. My sponsor said, go to a 7 a.m. meeting. I said, dang, I go to 7 a.m. meetings at AA? That's where I was. And I stayed and I stayed and I stayed. And then I met him again. And then him messed up. And, you know, he was alcoholic like me. He was in a meeting. I had eight months. He had three. We'd barely had a year. And so I stopped doing that. I just completely stopped looking for him, because it was jacking me up. So that's a character defect of mine, you know? And so I have to work these steps in order to find out about me, because I don't care. I mean, and then usually it's none of my business, except it is my business to help another alcoholic. So I came back in the program, and I was grateful to be here, let me tell you. I was so grateful that I didn't die. I never caught a sober breath until my children were 12 and 13 years old. They're 7 days from being a year apart. Never have I took a sober breath. That's terrible, you know? We do tragic things when we're drunk. We do. And I have a lot more stories. My biggest thing was, you know, that deal where my motto was, next time it'll be different. And the next time it was different was that I can't get another DWI. I remembered that part about that cop telling me, because I had to let him go. I didn't want to ruin his life because I had ruined so many lives and so many hurt my children. They've poured beer out of Budweiser bottles and filled it up with water and put it in there because we got to drink before we go drink. You know how we do. And I poured. I was so mad at them. And I didn't realize that they wanted me to stop drinking. You know, I didn't realize that. But anyway, and so what happened is that guy that I met, I had to let him go. I came to another crossroad in Alcoholics Anonymous. Said him or service, which one are you going to do? Because I don't know what's good for me or bad for me. One of my best, I mean, she's dead today, and that's Patty O. I'm sure y'all know her, because she's California. Yes, she did. And she told my story. First time anybody ever in Alcoholics Anonymous ever told my story was her. I'm an enabler, boom. Big fat enabler, okay? And so when what happened was, how much time do I have? I don't want to roll over and be, do I got some time, a little bit? Am I talking real fast? Okay. Usually I can complete the sentences pretty quickly. Okay. Anyway, so what happened with my sobriety is I started doing service work. I was going to this group called ODAP, and I volunteered myself to be the GSR. Well, first, I had to follow the GSR around because I was only the alternate. I'd never done service work before. And I was like, somebody said do service work, keep you sober. I'm like, okay, we got to do a bunch of stuff in here. But, you know, in my situation, I needed some service work. I needed to do something else besides my finite self. So I was a GSR. The alternate, he took a drink and OD'd on heroin and died. It's a sad, we're sad people. It's a hideous disease, and people die out here. They do. I've buried, and I'm sure y'all have too, lots of your friends that have come in and went back out. I'm one of the lucky ones that I didn't have to die. So anyway, let's see, where was I? And oh yeah, never forget this. And so my son, who has had a child, Chance. And he was just a baby, 9 months old, and he was out flittering around like he flitters around still. You know, one day he'll get it, maybe not, I don't know. And so my daughter lived in New York. She was on her master's degree, and she was going to adopt Chance, okay? So my mom and Chance, I took him to New York. They were going to New York, and I was working. I started a job in 2008. Never had a real job. I always worked in a bar, you know, and did this, money, men, the whole bit. But I had a real job for the first time. I worked for an attorney. And so I never will forget the thought in my mind. As soon as I can get them to New York and my daughter adopts them, I'm done. I'm free. I'm good. Okay? And so that was my thinking. And I took her to New York. My daughter got a divorce from her first husband. And that was the end of that. Okay, so no adoption coming on. And the reason I say this is because this is a part of my recovery, okay, was my grandson. And so my grandson, so here I am going to meetings every day and doing the deal, and I'm going back to work when I came back from New York. And this lady, out of the blue, man, I don't know where she came from. I know she worked with me, but I don't, why she said this, I'll never, well, I know now, but she said, I said, well, I got Chance in New York, I got my mother in New York, and Lindsay, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And she says, I don't know why you're so happy. And I said, well, because I don't have, you know, I'm done. I can do what I want to. She said, no, Chance is going to come back, and you're going to have to take care of him. I was like, lady, please don't tell me that, because I can't raise a rubber plant, okay? I've had trouble taking care of them, much less a real human being with blood, okay? And so I think I was like 4 years sober, maybe 4 years sober. And here they came. Of course they did. They came back. And so what happened was my mother's now getting up in age. She can't take care of him anymore. And so she said, well, Kelly, you're just going to have to take care of him. And I was like, all right. Well, because of sobriety, because of AA and going to meetings, I wasn't the best example of Alcoholics Anonymous when I first walked in here, when I walked in here the second time. I had a bad attitude, mad about that, okay, mad, real mad. Mad about, why do I have to? It's not my response. I mean, all this negative energy that was circling around my head. I look like somebody on Charlie Brown, whatever his name was, with the black cloud above his head. And so my sponsor got a hold of me, and she said, man, girl, you got to change your attitude. You got a bad attitude. a bad attitude. You shouldn't want to be sober and be an Alcoholics Anonymous with your bad attitude. You have a grandchild to take care of. And I'm like, oh, my God, help me now. And so the only thing I knew to do was keep doing service work and keep going to Alcoholics Anonymous. That's all I could do. That's all I knew to do. And I did that for a long time, put him in first grade, second grade, third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade, and then we moved to Allen, Texas. It's not very far from Dallas. It's probably about an hour. But anyway, we moved there, got a house. Now, not being able to raise the rubber plant, I had to raise him. So that meant I had to keep my job. I had to pay the house payment. I had to pay the insurance. I had to pay all this stuff. I wasn't used to doing that. I'm used to men doing that for me, not me doing it for myself. And that was just a part of growing up, you know, for me. And I did it for 10 years, you know. After a while, I did it. And it's what happened in the middle of that was one of my friends, Bill, he's passed now. God rest his soul. And I was big into service work. I was following people around on the area, on the district. I'd been on the district. I'd been in the group. I mean, I was really passionate about corrections. Very passionate about corrections. Being that at 5 years sober, I had him in an apartment, Chance and I. And I got a letter from Collin County, which is not good. And I was like, man, why do I got a letter from Collin County? What did I do? Well, when I went to jail for 3 months, that's as long as I've ever been in jail, they were supposed to transfer me, but they didn't. I mean, I really liked jail. I was there a lot, you know, pack for jail, pack your cigarettes, wear underwear, that kind of stuff, because I never did any of that. And so this letter said, you have a warrant for your arrest. And see, I'm working for an attorney. I didn't want them to find out. So I had to spend money and go get an attorney. Because when they were locked me up, they were supposed to transfer me to Collin County because I had stole stuff in 6 months. I was supposed to do 6 months in Collin County, but I didn't. They just let me walk out. And the reason they let me walk out was because God's got a sense of humor, and he's also got grace because he gave me lots of grace. If that hadn't happened, okay, I had to hire an attorney, had to go to court, and I was sitting there as nervous as a bumblebee, ready to go to jail, and what's going to happen to Chance? Well, I kept going to AA. And the attorney, the judge, they switched judges on me, thank God. And he said, you know, he came out the attorney and he says, you know, your record's bad. I said, yeah, it is. He said, you are lucky enough that you've been off probation for 10 years in 2 days. I said, oh, what's that mean? He said, that means you can qualify for probation. I was like, oh, I don't have to go to jail, okay? Because that's how close I am. I've always been that close to going to prison, just really close. That's why I guess I like corrections. And so other than that, I did the deal. I did 3 years probation in recovery, and I was a good probationer. I was ran up there to do the piss test, all that stuff. I was good at it. So she let me off. And so I kept going to AA. Well, one day Bill, my friend Bill, he said, hey, I want you to come to the area meeting. I go, the area meeting? What are we going to do there? He said, just show up. And I said, all right. Because he was corrections chair at the time, and he needed an alternate. And I didn't know why I was going there, but I did. And he said, yeah, I've found an alternate. I was like, oh, I'm so glad he did. I'm glad he found an alternate. He said, Kelly Hinkle, get up there and tell him your resume for you know, what you've done in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was like, you mean I'm going to be on the area? Like the area? And it just scared me to death. And so 9 times out of 10, I was like, I don't. And so I was his alternate on the area. It's Northeast Texas area, 65. I wasn't planning to do that, but for some reason he saw something in me, okay? Because I needed my feet real, real close to the ground and my mind in Alcoholics Anonymous because my grandson was going to twist it up. He was going to twist it up for me. So what happened was I was the alternate. I said, hey, Bill, what do you want me to do? He said, well, I'll tell you what you're going to do. You're going to do a two correction conventions twice a year. And I was like, you mean like food and stuff, like speakers? He was like, yeah, like speakers. And I said, I can't do that. And he said, well, that's okay. I got somebody to help you. That is the biggest word in Alcoholics Anonymous I've ever heard. I got somebody that will help you. Somebody that's going to be there for you and help you do it. And they did. And then at the end of that 2 years, they elected me for the corrections chair. So I was now the corrections chair for the area. And thank God I was, because that boy that I'm raising is doing drugs. He's doing this. He's doing that. He's doing it in my house. I'm scared to go because I'd have to go to hotel rooms. We'd be in assemblies. And I was so scared that he was going to burn my house down. I mean, just fearful. And I just had to leave it to God, you know. And I would pray and pray, God, please don't burn my house down, you know. Let him do that. And so, you know, Chance, quit smoking weed in my house. Quit. You know, he goes, I'm not smoking weed in your house. I'm smoking in the garage. It's not part of the house. I'm like, really? Okay. And then that's the way it was, but worse. And so because I was an Alcoholics Anonymous, because I was doing service work, it got to the point my sponsor, she was like, they were worried about me. And guess what? I was worried about me too. Because when you have someone living with you that's an alcoholic, he's a drug addict, doesn't matter. So, I mean, it is different. But when you have it living in your home and you got parties and I've got to get up and go to work and I had to get this new prescription, this bottle, and I had to put it stealing my pills, doing just all that stuff that they do, just like I did. You know, and he's crawling on the floor at night, coming in there. I said, Chance, what are you doing on my floor? And he would crawl back, you know. Just, it was a horrifying, most horrifying experience I've ever had. And so one day, he pushed me down. He never hit me, but he pushed me down. And I got so enraged that I sent him to jail. I said, you're going to jail, boy. Not only did he do that, but he took my car, stole it, and wrapped it around a telephone pole. And he was sitting in a cop car when I walked up. I said, theft, theft, give him theft, give him anything. Get him out of this house. I said, send him to jail. And they said, well, we'll send him to jail, but he's a minor. In the morning, you're going to have to come get him. You know, I couldn't understand. I didn't understand why I had to live like this. And so after a while, he went to jail. And I was like, good, bye, see ya, peace out. Well, thank God that happened. I called my sponsor, started keeping going into corrections. Service work will save your life because it saved mine. I'd pray at night, every night, and begging. I would beg God, please, can get me out of this. And he did. They have God is like the bow and arrow that you pull, and he's the black part. He hits it right on death every single time, every time. And he did. And so, and then my son went to jail, and he was in jail with him. And so I was like, well, this is even better. So I had to go to what's called Family Anonymous. It's basically Al-Anon. And I had to do the steps in Al-Anon, had to get a sponsor, because I'm an enabler. Didn't know I was, but I am. Then, after that, my grandson called me from jail. And he said, hey, blah, 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 you gonna get me out of jail? I said, nope, and hung up. That's a direct result of Al-Anon. And so then after that, he called me again. He said, hey, you gonna get me out of jail? I said, nope, click. Same thing. That's what I had to do to save my sobriety and save myself. Because grandson or no grandson, mother, daughter, son, my sobriety comes before every one of those people, every one of them. And at first, I felt guilty, you know. I don't feel guilty today. I mean, my daughter can do it. She can tune those people out. I have to go to a meeting in order to make sure that I don't have a freaking heart attack. She does have four kids, and they're lovely children. They are. They all are. They do what they do because they're kids. But anyway, my grandson, he finally got out of jail and started doing fentanyl. And one night, his friends found him on the floor. He was blue. And if they hadn't revived him and gave him Norco, is it Norco, Narcan? Narcan. He'd have died. And that's not my fault. You know, that wasn't my fault. But I was so scared. And so he checked himself into treatment. I had nothing to do with it. I promise you, nothing. They said, leave him alone. You're killing him. Leave him alone. And I did. And so he checked himself into treatment, and next thing I knew, I was watching TV one night, and there he was on the Channel 8 News. I was like, what in the heck is he doing there? He was telling his story, fentanyl. This woman's child, 25 years old, died, and he was sharing his story. They pulled him out of treatment to do it. It was remarkable. And so he did that. He finished that. He's on probation. He's finished one probation. He's about a year and some change sober. That's a miracle. A miracle. It is a miracle. I can be around him. He has a job. He has a car. You know, if you think for one second I had anything, I didn't have nothing to do with that. I don't even have anything to do with my sobriety. I have to ask God to give it to me every day. Because in the morning, when I wake up in the morning, I'm thinking about me. Me, me, me. All to me, me, me. And then I have to say the serenity prayer, and I have to do the third step, and I have to ask God to please help me think about y'all. Because y'all are what is important. I'm not important, you know. I'm just here, just like y'all, as a result of trying to get sober one day at a time. You know, my story, there's so much more to my story, and I don't care. Because all I know is that boy, like I said, he can get up one day and tell his story to y'all. Who knows? But my story, I've had nothing better than more of the best time I've ever had in my entire life in Alcoholics Anonymous. They gave me my relation back with my daughter,